A PI in North Carolina, Catherine Flowers, gets a call from a client. My wife is going to New York City, he says. I need you to follow her. But he won't pay for a second investigator. Flowers suggests, let's try to ping her cell phone. Client agrees. Flowers finds a service, a cell phone pinging service. It's not cheap, she says, $700. But, she says, they ping the phone once every hour for a full day. Flowers says it worked. They found the guy's wife, found her right there in Central Park after only 2 hours of cell phone tracking. Flowers' case was years ago, back in the day, like cell phone Wild West, when law was chasing new tech, unsure of, well, anything. Today's show is all about our constant companion, our leash, our personal data collector, that one piece of equipment that knows more about you than anyone. But first, I'm Nashville private investigator Hal Humphreys, and this is the sound of pursuit.
This episode brought to you by TransUnion TLO. A powerful research tool for companies, financial institutions, insurance carriers, and law enforcement agencies to find people, identify risk, detect fraud, and perform due diligence investigations. Using a proprietary algorithm and a massive repository of data that's growing daily, TransUnion TLO provides actionable information for investigative professionals.
This episode, episode 4. Locating mobile phones through pinging and triangulation. We stole that title from a 2008 story in Pursuit magazine. Over the years, that one article set a record for the most hits of any Pursuit story ever. And it's still getting a lot of hits to this day. Apparently, a whole lot of people type cell phone pinging into Google. People really want to know if this is possible, and if so, how to do it. Of course, in technological terms, 2008 is primeval. So when I stumbled across this article again, I got to thinking, what's possible now in terms of pinging a mobile phone? And what's legal? So I got a hold of an old radio buddy of mine, Sean Cole, and asked him to make some calls.
I started with the guy who wrote that 2008 piece on cell phone pinging and tracking.
All right, calling L. Scott Harrell.
It's L. Scott Harrell, actually. He's the original editor of Pursuit, and a PI in his own right. He does a lot of work for bail bondsmen, and so sometimes needs to find people who have violated the terms of their bail. Though, right now, he's on a kind of sabbatical in Aruba.
Hi.
I called him on my cell phone.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Doing fantastic, thanks.
Oh, that's good to hear. No one says fantastic ever anymore.
It's a...
And the first very important lesson I learned from Scott about cell phones is that they are terrible for talking to someone in Aruba. Case in point, I asked him to just read the first paragraph of that piece he wrote about all of this 5 years ago.
I hesitated to include this article since cell phone pings have always been something of an urban legend among private investigation and bail enforcement communities.
All right, I'm not going to torture you with that anymore.
However, I do know for certain that it is absolutely possible and that many fugitives and abducted children have been recovered through the use of cell phone pinging by various state and federal law enforcement agencies. Do you remember when President Bush went to the Middle East on a surprise visit to the troops not long ago? The media made a big deal about the fact that the Secret Service made everyone on board Air Force One, including the president, take the battery out of their cell phones so that the real bad guys didn't know their location. Voila! Cell phone pinging has gotten someone's attention.
And Scott's article on cell phone pinging got a lot of people's attention, drove a lot of traffic to the website. Part of the reason he wrote it was because it was such a hot-button issue, and it still is. After all, tracking someone's movements via their cell phone, it's like having a ubiquitous little plastic Judas on your side.
You know, we're talking about the one piece of gear that everybody carries with them at all times.
Right.
And if it's something that can be exploited in order to do our jobs as private investigators, bail enforcement agents, process servers, automobile repossessors, actually anybody who's interested in locating someone, then we're going to attempt to try to find a way to exploit those tools.
All y'all would love to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
Have you ever done it? Is that a delicate question?
That's a delicate question.
Sorry.
I would say that we, in my agency, and I personally have been able to use tracking in one form or another of somebody's mobile phone in order to locate them, yes. And some of the technologies that were used, some of the sources that were used in order to locate people, today it would be frowned upon. Back then, no one really knew legally how these questions would be answered, but at the time, I would certainly use every and all methods that, to me, were reasonably legal to locate a fugitive on behalf of a client. Absolutely, 100%, yes.
Reasonably legal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be clearer, Scott says he went through a pinging service, which charged him $450 just to test it out. He says he only used the service a couple of times and that he never bothered to ask them how they went about pinging a phone. He just knows that it was a genuine ping. But before I get into all that and what a genuine ping even is, I need to step back for a moment and say this. Once you start delving into the world of cell phone location, it's possible to delve and delve and keep delving until you look up and realize you're in an absolute rabbit hole of technological possibilities and legal complexities which has no bottom to it, and when you finally open your mouth to try to convey what you've learned down there, it might end up sounding a little bit like this.
For every surveillance technology, there is a counter-surveillance technology.
You have an active surveillance device and a passive surveillance device.
Smith versus Maryland and United States versus Miller.
Anyone who had called a particular number.
The question isn't whether or not the rabbit hole exists, it's just how deep into it you want to go.
So here, in short, is what I've gathered. There are basically two ways to locate somebody's cell phone. The first way is to go through the phone service provider, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, those guys, because you're going to need access to something called the central switch. Every cellular system has one. It's sort of like a telephone switchboard from the old days, in that it's how calls and text messages and all cell communication is routed. Basically, your phone is constantly communicating with the cell towers around you, and the cell towers are communicating with the switch. So that's one way of locating a phone. The other method we're going to call the rogue tower method. That's R-O-G-U-E tower. Sounds like something out of a quasi-mystical Sony PlayStation video game circa 1998, because it is. But it's also a way of locating someone's cell phone without needing help from the cell service provider. Instead, you trick the person's phone into thinking you are the cell service provider in this way that's really simple and yet totally ingenious at the same time. So anyway, I'm going to talk about both of these methods in more detail and then the legalities, or lack thereof, depending on who you are, of each.
Hello, this is Aaron.
And I'm going to lean heavily on Aaron Turner because, frankly, he knows more about mobile technology and computers and so forth than someone I could fictionally invent. When I asked him to identify himself for this story, he literally said,
"Do you have an hour?"
And then talked for 22 minutes straight, telling me about pretty much every job he's ever done.
I started my first internet tech company in 1997. I ran Microsoft's internet divisions for Latin America, built out most of the ISPs in Latin America, helped design things like Windows Update. I was the techno geek who helped them translate the legal jargon of the Patriot Act into reality.
And now he runs a company called IntegraCell, which works almost exclusively overseas, teaching governments and corporations how to protect their cellular systems and also teaching law enforcement about the central switch method of surveillance and about locating a phone with a rogue tower. So central switch. To begin with, if I want to locate your phone, and therefore you, through the switch, I need your phone number. That's not negotiable. Can't find your phone without it. But phone number is too simple a term for the cell phone industry. They prefer to call it a mobile subscriber integrated services digital network number. MSISDN. Rolls off the tongue. And that's just where the chain of location starts. Because then
you're going to translate that MSISDN to what's called an IMSI.
Or an International Mobile Subscriber Identity.
IMSI.
And IMSI is the billing record. Basically, that's what keeps track of how many calls you're making, who you need to be billed to, and that sort of thing. And then the IMSI can then be translated to the associated IMEI.
International Mobile Station Equipment Identity.
Which is the hardware identifier of the phone that that person is using.
The serial number, basically, of the device that's in your pocket, assuming you're wearing pants. Actually, do this. Take out your phone for a second. Everybody do this. And dial *#06# on the keypad. We'll wait as you *#06#. You will likely see a long, long number in the screen. That's your IMEI.
So now I'm going to go to the switch and I'm going to say, where is the hardware that is associated with this billing record that is associated with this telephone number?
And I can do that in a couple of ways. I can either look up the towers your phone signal is bouncing off of and sort of triangulate your location. It's not sort of. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm triangulating your location. Or I can send a signal to your phone through the GPS system, a ping, and then your phone will report back its location. And then I go and get you. But if I don't have access to the switch, if I don't have the cell company's cooperation, that's when I might try out the second method. Rogue tower.
Okay, rogue tower is where you basically stand up your own cell phone tower and you emulate the carrier and you make someone's cell phone think that you're the carrier, but you're really not the carrier, you're really a malicious actor.
Or you're Aaron. He's had practical experience with this technology.
Yeah, so we were contracted by a Caribbean government. The president of that country's cousin had been kidnapped for an extortion plot. We went in to go help identify where the kidnappers were using rogue tower equipment.
It's not an actual tower. It's more like a box. It's bigger than a bread box, but not by much. And rogue tower is just one of the things it's called. You'll more likely hear it referred to by the sexier, more detective TV show sounding name of Stingray.
The Stingray is the name brand of a product sold by the Harris Corporation, which is an American company that manufactures surveillance technology.
And this is Chris Segoyan, a surveillance expert with the ACLU. He says Stingray is now the generic term for this technology in some circles, the way all petroleum jelly is referred to as Vaseline.
I mean, the best way to think about the Stingray is it's like that game you play when you're a kid in a swimming pool, Marco Polo.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so that you'll have, you know, one kid in the pool who's covering their eyes, and then when they say Marco, all their friends, have to shout out Polo.
Polo, yeah.
Right, so that's the game, and that's how phones work, too. So your phone has no way of knowing when it's talking to a cell phone tower that's run by the phone company that you use and you pay every month for service.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a T-Mobile subscriber and your phone sees a cell tower nearby that calls itself a T-Mobile tower, the tower could be lying.
It could be a fake tower, a rogue tower.
Now, as a practical matter, most towers don't lie.
You have to be within 5 to 15 kilometers of the target.
If your phone sees an AT&T tower, chances are it's an AT&T tower.
You have to have a directional antenna. If the target's moving, you've got to be moving too.
But there's nothing forcing the tower to be honest.
So logistically, rogue tower is much harder, but you can do it independent of the carrier.
Once upon a time, rogue towers, stingrays, were only available to the military and the FBI and other federal agencies. But in recent years, Harris Corporation has been selling them to state and local police forces, too. There are police departments in Baltimore with this technology now, Miami, parts of Texas, Minnesota, Washington, D.C., and the Stingray-branded product is just one in a long line of trackers and tappers and antennas in the Harris catalog. There's also the Kingfish, the Harpoon, the Amberjack, which is a kind of fish. They really love their maritime symbolism. And they cost a lot, tens of thousands of dollars. The latest device, the Hailstorm, goes for as much as $170,000. I did contact Harris Corporation, asking if I could talk with someone there. And I got a very short email back from one of the media representatives that said, quote, "Sorry, we cannot comment for your story." Chris Segoyan hasn't had much luck either.
Countless emails I've sent have been ignored. I think in their view, the less that's discussed about their products, the better. But what's weird, right, is on one hand, they, the Harris Corporation and the Department of Justice, treat this technology like it's the most secret technology in the world. But on the other hand, it's been featured in episodes of The Wire. A device that's very similar to the Stingray makes an appearance in Zero Dark 30.
Okay, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50. We're within 10 meters of it.
It's been the subject of front page articles in the Wall Street Journal. And you can now buy generic versions of this technology for $5,000 online. This is not a state secret anymore.
The Harris Stingray stuff is incredibly expensive. I don't like it.
Again, Aaron Turner.
We prefer using a system developed by a small Cypriot company.
Company in Cyprus.
Just because of its flexibility and the technical stuff in it. But the Russians sell a platform, the Chinese sell a platform. There's probably 15 different platforms you can buy to do this.
And when I asked Aaron if he thought that maybe there were private investigators out there using this stuff, he said he didn't know. However,
they can lay their hands on rogue towers very easily.
Can they?
Oh, gosh, yeah. A small rogue tower system, $50,000? I mean, the barrier to entry is not extreme.
I've spoken to a number of PIs who know about this stuff.
Chris Segoyan with the ACLU.
And they know a little bit too much for me to think that they learned it from just reading the newspaper. I don't have any evidence suggesting that PIs have purchased this stuff, but they know far too much. I think personally that it's being used, but I have no way of proving it.
But it's possible for private citizens to get their hands on this stuff and to use it. That much is certain. And from everything I've gathered in my reporting, it is also not legal. We're moving on to the legalities of all this now. So where central switch tracking is concerned, officially, the only way cell phone companies are going to cooperate with you is if you're a cop.
Privately, it's tough. If anybody tells you that they can get phones pinged, it's not that easy.
This is a cop, Ron Raspoli. He's a detective with the Crimes Against Property Squad in New York. He also happens to be a private investigator on the side. And he made it clear to me that his private investigator brethren do not have the same pinging power as his police brethren do.
If they are doing it, they're not doing it legally. They're not, you know, they're not going through the right channels. Companies will tell you, yeah, well, we can locate this person. They'll tell you they ping the phone, but they don't really ping the phone. They're doing like a pretext.
Which, when I first was reading about all of this and I saw that term pretext, I thought, oh, that must be some sort of highly technical, like pretext, like it's before a text or something. No, it's a pretext. It's a pretense. It's a fake reason, a con, basically, to get somebody to tell you where they are. Ron Raspoli does that a lot. Anyway, the right channels are these. You need some sort of approval from a judge, be it a warrant, court order, subpoena, something. Once you get that, you call up a special department at the phone company that your target uses. Usually it's called a subpoena compliance department.
You've reached the Verizon Wireless Subpoena and Court Order Processing Group. This call may be monitored at any time.
Every cell company has one. AT&T.
For processing subpoenas for AT&T Wireless. Press 3.
Nextel.
For subpoena compliance and historic records request, press 3.
T-Mobile.
If you wish to speak to a legal compliance agent on our court order team, please press 3.
None of them would talk to me. Only Verizon responded to my questions, and only in writing. The email says, quote, Verizon Wireless requires law enforcement to follow proper legal procedure, including subpoenas and warrants, when requesting any customer information. End quote. Ron Raspoli says he only goes through this process a couple of times a year at most. And he told me about this one recent case that I thought was telling in terms of how complicated the legalities can get. He was working with some federal agents, actually, who pinged a guy's phone, young guy in his 20s, wanted for robbery and attempted murder. And they found him just sitting in front of this house on Long Island. But then the guy got up and walked into the house, which you wouldn't think would pose much of a problem. except when you're a cop.
You can't just walk in, and you're probably not going to get a search warrant for the house just based on that phone being there. You may have the person there, you may say, yeah, the phone's in the house. But again, it may not be the person, it just may be the phone. In this case, though, they allowed me to come into the house, and I eventually found him hiding upstairs in a closet. Actually, some four-year-old kid actually thought he was playing a game, and when I said, did you see this guy? He said, yeah, he's hiding me. He's in the closet.
He thought they were playing hide and seek.
Oh, yeah, and he just said, there he is, in the closet. And I said, okay. And it was his nephew.
Oh, my God, that's adorable. And such a problem for the uncle.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, a warrant, supported by probable cause and signed by a judge, that's the highest form of approval you can get to go ahead and ping someone's phone or track them or use a rogue tower or whatever. And a lot of state and local police departments do get warrants, but a lot of them don't, and they don't have to. There's no federal requirement saying the police need a warrant to find you by pinging your phone. In fact, two different federal courts of appeals in the last 2 years ruled that a warrant is not required. One of the opinions said the defendant had, quote, no reasonable expectation of privacy in the GPS data and location of his cell phone, end quote. Though that said, both Maine and Montana passed statewide laws this year saying warrants are necessary. The ACLU says a warrant should be necessary for both the central switch stuff we talked about and Rogue Tower. But with Rogue Tower, with the stingrays, there's an extra layer of concern. After all, says Chris Segoyan with the ACLU, the stingrayers can send signals into your house looking for your phone or into your pocketbook. In other words, Fourth Amendment protected space. And he gave me this analogy.
If the police wanted to get a copy of your phone bill, they could go to the phone company with a subpoena and ask for that. Just because they could go to the phone company and get a copy of your phone bill doesn't mean that they can break into your home to steal the phone bill that's sitting on your dining table.
If I worked for who he worked for, I'd take that argument.
But Aaron Turner at IntegraCell, you may not be surprised, does not take that argument. It's not that he thinks privacy isn't important, he says. It's that your cell phone is accessing frequencies that are technically owned by the government. He says just using a phone means you gave up your right not to be stingrayed. And then he gave me an analogy.
It's like going into the mall and shouting something out and saying, everything I say right now you can't listen to, even though you're shouting in the middle of a shopping mall.
Which I've done when drunk. I'm joking. But the thing is, there's a whole, I was going to say new, it's not even that new, universe of technology now that not just private investigators, but private everybody can use to keep track of whomever they want. If you want to surveil someone these days, chances are they're on Facebook talking about which bowling alley they go to. That's not a hypothetical. Scott Harrell, who you heard from at the beginning, says he found a guy that way. Also, if you really do want to access cell site information from the carrier, there are ways to get it. They're not ethical. But Aaron Turner says he knew a PI who'd just bribe someone at the carrier. To which I said, wow, talk about a fireable offense. To which Aaron said, there are worse things that go on at the carrier all the time.
Like what?
Oh, I mean, and I won't say which carrier, but there is a group of technicians at one of the mobile carriers that has a bounty on nude photos.
No.
Basically, they go and scrape people's phones looking for sexy shots that, you know, people are, you know, sexting each other.
They collect the photos and then what, sell them to somebody?
Nowadays, there's not really that many ways to make money off of the pictures, and so generally you just pool them together.
And how do you know about that?
Let's just say that I've been around people who do that sort of thing.
Okay, gotcha.
May have overheard a conversation amongst a group of people who may be employed by carriers. And
okay. I'll have to tell
you. Now, I will say that because of my expertise overseas, that conversation probably took place outside of the United States. So I can't say specifically that happens here in the United States. But there may be a foreign carrier that when you go visiting them, maybe this foreign carrier just happens to be in a really cool beach resort area, and that people seem to take naked pictures of themselves a lot there. And so, you know, those dudes like to harvest those pictures.
Wow. Well?
So don't take naked pictures of yourself while vacationing in the Caribbean.
Wise words, sir.
Glad to pass on that wisdom. That's much more creepy to me than someone selling your phone logs to a PI.
That's the sound of pursuit. I'm Hal Humphreys. Thanks to producer Sean Cole. And thanks to TLO for sponsoring this podcast. Our theme song, composed by Jason White. Music by Lolotel. Special thanks to Simon Gugela. Simon says,
no one says fantastic ever anymore.
The podcast is over. Turn it off.